pred my solution wasn't one of the recommended ones in, for one task. Should I, but it was something I had never seen before and that for so long that existence. And should I send it to someone or someone?
You can send it to me if you like.
Yeah, well, he said that I should send it to someone. Probably they will include it as a, you know, recommended solution or something. I don't know. If you need, I can send it. I'm explaining how it works. If you don't, then I won't.
Well, it should be clear from the code how it works, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it should.
Russia should have comments in the code saying.
Yeah.
Send me a copy, please. Okay, it's a little bit after 2 o'clock, so let's get started. Are there any questions? No questions. Is everybody signed up for the mock exam? Good. How many people have done something for the programming competition or are doing something? Small number, okay. So I'd hope to see a larger number. Maybe there are fewer people here. Maybe they're off working on the programming competition. Right, so the deadline is this Thursday and you just send an email to the TAs for the course, Phil Scott and Zoe Leiper. They've already received at least one entry. So any questions about the programming competition? Is that Lambda on your t-shirt up there? Cool. Wow, yay. You guys all have to go away again. You don't have the right t-shirts. Okay, so do you remember where we were last time? We were about to dive in to the wonderful world of parsers. So we'll go back and remind you where we are. So a parser, as you'll recall, right, we learned how to write show functions. We even learned how using deriving to get something to write a show function for us if we wanted to. Right, the show function converts an arbitrary data structure into a string. So it's very convenient for displaying the string. And of course, a read function or a parser goes the other way. It converts a string into a data structure. So typically we might want to represent arithmetic expressions as trees, but we have a standard way of printing them out, which is shown here, which is, right, a plus tree is written out as something with a plus in the middle and surrounded by parentheses, and similarly for a multiplication tree. And then if you have an integer, you just show that integer. Okay. So this is making use of Haskell's type classes so that we can define show at different types. So here we're using show on type integer. Here we're using show on type expression. Here's our evaluator for expressions. I hope this is straightforward by now. Are there any questions about this? Because for some people, it might not be straightforward. And then, oops, this doesn't quite fit on one line, does it? Let's just break it up. And here is our parser for expressions. And the job of the parser is to convert the expression into the corresponding underlying data structure. So I'm just going to delete this for a minute. And here I'm going to add the line deriving show. So this will cause it to print expressions just in this form, using con and colon plus and star. Don't want that. Load it. Good. So now if I say, so my parser is called expression, and the way I apply a parser is with a function called run. So if I say run expr 1 plus 2 times 3, so this should give us the tree representing 1 plus 2 times 3. Unhappy. What have I done wrong? I just tried it. If I'm using the correct run. Oh, I see what I did wrong. Run, of course, takes one argument, which is the parser, and the other, which is the thing to parse. There we go. Ooh, that's bizarre. All right, hold a sec. Again. It's not using the right show function. That's very bizarre. All right. Let E0 equal it. So now we can say evaluate E0, and that should return the value of the expression, which is 7. Anybody see what I'm doing wrong? I've told it deriving show, so it should print out show using con and plus and star. It must not be reading that for some reason.
Did you save it?
Yeah, I saved it. If I hadn't saved it, there'd be a star on the bottom line. That's the obvious thing to have gone wrong. Let's try one thing. Let's try that. I hate it when things go wrong. Oh, much better. Okay. Parse. Oops. No, don't do that.
Let's call that E0 even. There we go. Now if I print E0, right, there's our tree. And if I evaluate it, there's our value. Okay. Let's try another expression. What expression do you want me to parse?
5 plus 3 times 1,
like that. So now I need to tell you that expressions have to be fully parenthesized. It won't deal with them otherwise. Okay, so shall I do that? Parentheses around the whole thing. Do you want to try more than three operators? Let's try plus 1,000 on the end, just to see if it can deal with numbers of more than one digit. Oh, not happy. What did I do wrong? Oh, I left out the word expr. Okay, and now if I say, what is E1? It's that parse tree. And if I say eval E1, it gives us that. Which is, yes, indeed, 5 plus 3 times 1 is 8, so 1,008 is correct. Okay? So the parser really works. So let's look at how we define the parser for an expression. It says there are three possibilities. It's either going to be an integer, or it's going to be an open parenthesis, followed by an expression, followed by a plus sign, followed by an expression, followed by a closed parenthesis, or it's going to be an open parenthesis, and a an open parenthesis, followed by an expression, followed by a star, followed by an expression, followed by a closed parenthesis. Now, what are these always bits? So once I've parsed it, I need to convert it to the corresponding value. So if it's an integer, I have to write the constructor con around it, right? Because that's how the data type is defined. If it's a sum, I'm going to have to combine the two things with colon plus, and if it's a times, I'll have to combine them with colon star. So always con takes the result of this parser and applies con to it. Always add takes the result of doing all that parsing and applies add to it. And what does that do? It says, well, add is going to get 5 arguments, because there were 5 things after this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The first of those should be the result of posting an open parenthesis, which is an open parenthesis. The second should be the result of parsing the expression, which we'll call E. The next thing should be the result of parsing plus, which will be a plus. The next thing is the result of parsing the other expression, which we'll call F. And the last thing is the result of parsing the closed parenthesis, which is star. And it should just take E and F and combine them with colon plus. And the same with colon star. So it's fairly easy to write one of these parsers. You just need to stick in one of these adjusting functions so that it always does the right thing. Okay, is there any questions about that? Notice I'm requiring the parsers to always be fully parenthesized. And there's a reason for that, which I'll explain later. So let's go in and look and see how the parsers actually work. Notice I've made a very clear division here between users of the parser and actually writing the details of the parser. And what I first explained to you is how to use the parser, and now I'm going to explain to you how to write the parser. And you remember we talked about abstraction and abstraction barriers, and this is exactly where it comes in. Everything I've told you so far is all that the user of the parser should need to know. There are lots of details that are going to be hidden. How do you hide those details? Do you remember?
use a module and you only export the bits you want the user to see, right? It's the mine principle. You can keep hidden for yourself all the details you don't want the user to see, and that lets you have control over things like data invariance. Right? You remembered for set, we didn't export various parts of set, so you could control that the representation was a tree in a particular order, with everything in the left subtree smaller than the middle element and everything in the right subtree greater. So we're going to do something similar here. We're not going to export the representation. We're going to hide it so that we have control over it. And the user doesn't need to see those details, and we're free to change them as we see fit. Okay? Very important principle. So do you all believe you know enough to use the parser if you want to? Right, now's a good time to ask a question if you don't feel you know how to use the parser. Any questions about that? No, yes? That's a good question, but I'll get to that later. The way we defined it, it has to be fully parenthesized. So if it's not, it'll do the same thing as if you give it something. Oops. If it's not, it will. What happens if you give it nonsense? Oh, that's interesting. I'd expect an error. Exception, no parse. Okay, it didn't actually do the parsing until I tried to print the thing. And then it finally said, no, there's nothing here. So if I tried to look at E2, it said, no, you didn't manage to parse it. And if I just left out some parentheses, because I said you need the parentheses, it will just fail to parse. No parse. Okay? So it should be designed so if something doesn't match what's called the grammar, the thing that specifies what strings we're going to accept, it will give you a no parse error. Okay, so here's my definition of parser. And you notice it's a module that exports various functions. And the key thing that we've exported is parse, which takes a parser and a string, and a parser of type A and a string, and it returns a value of type A. So if you have a parser type expr, we'll give it a string and it'll return a value of type expr. Now, what's the type of parsers? A parser is a function that takes a string, as we'd expect, but doesn't just return a value of type A. It returns a list of A string pairs. And the reason is that there might be more than one successful parse. Let me show you an example of that. So the int function I only found one parse, okay. So parses finds all possible parses of something. The star function, let's see, we need letters or something. Let's see what I defined in here. So lower, it turns out, is going to match a lowercase letter. Okay, so if I find all the parses of a lowercase letter beginning the string A, B, C, D, E, that doesn't look good. Should have found A. Yes. There we go.
So if we apply, I'm not sure what parsers is doing that. Oh, I know what parsers is doing. Okay, we'll ignore that. So apply is what takes a parser into string and returns the list of results. So if we apply lower to A, B, C, D, E, you see, well, it found an A at the beginning, as we'd expect. And the remaining string left to be parsed is B, C, D, E. Now, why do we return a list of these things? Because sometimes there will be more than one. So in a minute, we're going to define something called star, which is going to apply a parser zero or more times, as many as it can. So this will apply it, right? It might find five lowercase letters at the front, or four, or three, or two, or one, or none. So if we apply lower to A, B, C, D, E, right, we get a bunch of parsers. The longest one is it finds all the letters. Next one is it takes the first four, but didn't parse the next bit. First three didn't parse the next two, and so on. Notice that if we give it something with an uppercase letter, it never parses it. It always leaves that letter unparsed. And so if we begin with an uppercase letter, it'll find no parses at all. It says, well, there's a parse of zero characters, and the remaining characters left to be parsed are A, B, C, D, E. Is that clear enough to people? So how does this thing work? So notice I said parser is a function that takes a string to a list of A string pairs, but I wrapped a constructor, make, around it. And the reason I did that is for precisely one purpose. So up here, when I exported parser, I could have said export the parser and export the constructor make. But I didn't. I'm only exporting the parser. I'm not exporting make. So that means no one else other than this particular module can make a parser. In other words, mine. I get to control all the parsers. You can't see how a parser works. Only I know. That's the reason for putting make in there. Just as we did with setList and setTree. So then to apply the parser, I just want to apply the function. Right? So I'm going to let PQR stand for parsers. So make of P is my parser, S is my string. So apply, as we saw, takes a parser and a string, and it just returns all the value remaining string pairs for each value remaining string pair that you get by applying P to S. This is actually just a long-winded way of saying apply P to S. Okay, but notice that I've got make over here to extract the function. So a parser is one of these functions with make wrapped around it. So the actual parse function, right? So the parses function, instead of just finding, it's supposed to find all the complete parses. So it's a complete parse if the remaining string T is the empty string. So it finds all the parses and then throws out any that aren't complete parses. And then the parse function says find all the complete parses and then extract the one parse. What extract does, right, if there are no parses, it says error, no parse. If there's one parse, it says it returns the parse. And if there's two or more parses, it says error, ambiguous parse. That means there's not just one way of parsing it. So do people see how parse works? So parse is one of the things we will export. In case you really want to do ambiguous parses, we'll export parses as well, so you can get all the ambiguous parses. Okay, so now we need to start building parsers. So what's the simplest parser?
Right? We used this in our examples. We had token of open and token of plus and token of close. So token just matches one given character.
So token of C is going to be a parser R. What's R going to do? Given the empty string, it's going to return
the empty list of parses. Right? What we're saying is I'm looking for something that begins with a C. If we give it something that has nothing in it at all, it says, nope, that doesn't match. So it returns the empty list of parses.
If you give it a string beginning with the character D, followed by the remaining string S, it says, right, if D is the same as C, yay, I found it. Return the parse consisting of D and S. I could, of course, have said C and S here, because C and D are equal. But if it's not equal, then there was no C at the beginning, and we fail, and we say, nope, there are no parses. So the only way we succeed is if that character's at the beginning. Right, so let's try an example. Apply token. What shall I look for at the beginning of the string? Name a character. Uppercase X. Does it begin with X? Okay, so let's try something that does begin with X. So, I know it's wrong. Can you see what's wrong? At the parser's token X, the thing the string to apply to is X, Y, Z. Let's apply it. Yes! So it says, I succeeded. I found an X at the beginning, and there was a YZ left over at the end. Let's apply it to the empty string. Will that succeed or fail? We'll vote. How many people think that will fail? How many people think it will succeed? Oh. And you think it will succeed returning what? Returning the empty thing. Okay, let's try it and see. It failed. Said, nope, there are no parses there. And if you remember, if you look back at the definition, that's what we said it should do. Given the empty string, return no parses. Okay. And if we give it a string that doesn't have a capital X at the beginning, it fails. Only if you give it a capital X will it succeed. So there's one capital X at the beginning, and then five ones remaining to be parsed at the end. Okay? So care is a parser that will parse any given one character. So whatever the character is at the beginning of the string, it returns it. So it's less picky than token. Token says it must be this character. Char says, I'll take any character. As long as there's a character at the beginning, I'll succeed. The only way Char can fail is if you give it the empty list. Then it will fail because there's no character for it to return. So let's try char. So it returns the A very happily. Let's pick some exotic character like exclamation mark. Let's swear at it. So it happily returns the exclamation mark and then the remaining unparsed string. The only way it can fail is if we give it the empty string. That says, nope, I found no parses. Otherwise, it'll parse whatever character is there. Okay. We'll get to that one in a minute because we'll need to see some more to see how that works. Now, the next thing we can do is combine two parsers. Let's say we want to say, I'm happy as long as the character is either an open parenthesis or a closed parenthesis, but anything else I'm unhappy with. How would we do that? So if it's, let's say lowercase or uppercase A. So lowercase A, I'm happy. Uppercase A, I'm happy. Whoops, these should be characters, not strings. And anything else I'm unhappy. So if I give it A, B, C, D, E, it'll say, yes, I'm happy I found an A, and there's B, C, D, E unparsed.
if we give it it's happy. If we give it this, which does not begin with a small a or a capital A, it's unhappy and it doesn't find any parcels. Oh, let's try one more thing. This says, I'll take anything that's a lowercase a or any character whatsoever. So now, if we give it B, C, D, E, right, it'll be happy. It finds the B. What will happen here? It'll find two parses, both the same. Oh, I found a small a. Oh, I found any character whatsoever. So both parses succeed. So that's an ambiguous parse. Parsed it two different ways, which in this case happen to be identical. So the way to combine parses is very easy. Right? P and Q are our parse functions. We're going to return a parser R. What happens when R is applied to S? Well, you apply P to S, that gives you a list of parses. You apply Q to S, that gives you a list of parses, and you just concatenate them together. So that gives you all the successful parses found by both P and Q. Okay. So now we're going to get to some interesting things. So first let me show you guard so I can define some more interesting parses. So what guard does is it says apply a parser, it's going to return a value. I want to check that that value satisfies a given predicate. So we're going to give guard two things, a predicate P, which is a function from A to bool, and a parser that returns an A. And that gives a new parser, so that parser that returns an A we'll call Q, that returns a new parser that returns an A called R. But this A has to satisfy the predicate. So what it does is, R applied to a string, what do you do? Apply Q to the string, let XT be the parse, apply P to X, and then return all those XT parses as long as P of X is true. Okay, so how can we use this? I'll show you down here. Lower is guard of is lower and char. So char returns any character whatsoever, and then is lower checks that it's lowercase. So this is how we build a parser that finds lowercase letters but nothing else. Similarly, digit applies char and then applies isDigit to it. So it'll parse a digit but nothing else. So let's try that. Ooh, now what have I done wrong? Couldn't match expected type parser A. It's inferred type. Oh, right, we have to apply is lower to char, don't we? That's telling me I'm missing the char argument. There we go. So that worked. Found an A. What if I use isUpper here? Will that work? No, because A is not uppercase. But if I give it this, will it work? Right? X is uppercase, so that should work. Okay. And if we use isDigit, will that work? Nope. What's a string that will work? 1, 2, 3, 4. Right, found the 1, leaves the 2, 3, 4 to be parsed. Okay? So that's how guard works. So we're almost there.
Now, here are two other parsers that are handy. One of these is going to turn out, one of these looks completely trivial. It's going to turn out to be really, really handy. That is the always parser, the parser that always succeeds. Okay? So always takes a value of type A and returns a parser for A. What that's going to do is it's going to read no characters whatsoever. Right? So it can succeed even with the empty string. It'll read no characters and return the value x that we gave it. So always of x is a parser r. R takes a string s, and it returns the value x plus value s. So it's always happy. No matter what string you give it, it parses and succeeds with the value x. Right? You know some people like that who are always happy. So let's try an example. If we apply always 42, because 42 is the answer, to the string A, B, C, D, E, it will return one parse, which has the value 42, and the string remaining to be parsed A, B, C, D, E. Okay, if we give it a different string, like the empty string, it still succeeds. If we give it the string, don't parse me, it doesn't map bound, still succeeds, and returns 42. Okay, and then our other parser is called never. It never succeeds. Given a string S, it returns the empty list no matter what. It always fails. It never, ever succeeds. It's unhappy with everything. You know people like that too, right? So if we apply never to A, B, C, D, E, it fails. If we apply never to please, please parse me, it doesn't. Okay, so that's always a never. So what can we do? We can parse a character. We can apply a predicate to the result of our parse to see if it satisfies some property. We can parse a given character. We can combine two parsers if it's one or the other. And we can always succeed and we can always fail. What's the one really important thing that we're missing? The absolutely vital thing that a parser must do. And parse one thing and then parse another one. Let's do that. Now this one's a little bit tricky, so I'm going to do something different first. I'll just copy it. I need to give this one a slightly different name, so I'll call it four stars. So four stars takes a parser of A and a parser of B, and it returns an A-B pair. Okay? And what we're going to do, so it takes a string S as its input. What are we going to do? We're going to apply P to S. And it'll return a list of pairs. X is the value. T is the remaining string to be parsed. So now we have to parse the remaining string. So we'll take Q, apply that to T, and then it'll return a value y, and a remaining string u that's left to be parsed. And then what we'll return is the xy pair and the remaining string u. So let's try that. Let's reload. Okay, let's try, apply. What shall we parse? Is lower, lowercase letter. And a digit. How about that? So a lowercase letter followed by a digit. And let's apply that to A1 stuff. So this should return a pair consisting of what? An A1 pair. And it did. If either of these fail, right? If the first thing's not a lowercase letter, it fails. If the first thing's a lowercase letter, but the second thing's not a digit, it fails. Okay. And we can combine any two things we want, right? If we want two digits, what will this do? Right. So it'll find 0 for the first digit, 1 for the second digit, and then the remaining unparsed bit will be 2, 3, 4. Okay? So that's how pairing works. Pretty straightforward. Now, there's only one trouble, which is usually when we're parsing things, we don't want to just, you know, if we parse 5 things, we don't really want to return 5 nested pairs or something like that, right? We had an example where we were parsing 5 things, and what we wanted to return was an expression built from 2 of the things in it. So in general, when we're parsing lots of things, we want to apply an arbitrary function to the result. So we're going to change our parser a little bit, and that's what I had here for star, star, star. It's going to let us apply an arbitrary function. Okay? So it's going to take a parser that returns a function of type A to B, and a parser that returns an A, and it'll give us a parser that returns a B. How does that work? So the first bit's the same as before. We apply R to S. So if I apply R to S, apply P to S. Let F be this value of type A to B, and T be the remaining unparsed string. Then apply the other parser, Q, to the remaining unparsed string T. That'll return a list of pairs. Let X be the value parsed. That'll be this value of type A. And U be the remaining unparsed string. And then the value we return is F applied to X, and the remainder U. Okay, let's try that. Let's apply. Now, how are we going to get a parser that returns a function? Well, one way we can do it is to use always. Always succeeds and returns whatever value we give it. So let me do always is digit. And let's apply that to char. And let's apply that to 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. What's that going to return? What's that going to return? Zero is the first value, and 1, 2, 3, 4 is the remainder. All 5 values. Okay. Actually, what's going to do is, what will char do if applied to 0, 1, 2, 3, 4? Let's try this first. What will always is digit do if applied to 0, 1, 2, 3, 4? Sorry? It will succeed in parsing it, and what value does it return? Ah, always is digit, always returns is digit. Right? Remember, always we gave it the value to return. So always is digit returns is digit, and how much of the string does it parse? None of it. So the remaining unparsed bit is the whole string. So 0, 1, 2, 3, 4 will be the remainder to parse. Now, if we apply char to 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, what do we get? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so if we apply char to 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, we get 0 as the value, and 1, 2, 3, 4. And then if we apply isDigit to 0, what do we get? isDigit applied to 0 is true, right? Because it's a function that returns true or false. So let's try that. Right, it returns true and the remaining unparsed bit, which is 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay? Let me just do that in detail.
But if we do let f of x equal apply, always is digit, to 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. Ooh, what have I done wrong? Oh, I know it's wrong, right? It's going to return a list. So we'll return a list with one pair, oops, ft in it. Right. And now if I can print out both these things. I can say, right, let's print f. It says, well, it's a function. I can't tell you anything else about it. All right, well, let's see. Tell me the type of f. Ah, it's a predicate. Takes a character and returns a truth value. Okay, and then let's do the other one. Let xu be the result of applying always char to t. Now what's x? It's, ooh, oh, I said always. Stilly me, I didn't mean to do that, did I? Let's try that again. Let's apply char to t. Now what's x? It's the character 0. What's u? It's the remaining unparsed bit, 1, 2, 3, 4. Notice after the first bit, t was the whole string, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then, of course, if I apply f to x, that returns true. Let's try another one. What function shall I apply? Let's try 2 upper. To char. What's this going to return? So 2 upper given a character returns character. So it's going to return a character paired with the remaining unparsed string. What character is it going to return? Upper to A. Right. So it parses the A, then maps it to uppercase. Okay. So now we can do more interesting things. Right. Let's let pair take 2 arguments, x and y, and return an xy pair. So pair applied to A and B is an AB pair. So now I can apply always pair to char and char and A, B, C, D. What's this going to return? Right. So this will return the pairing function. This will return the first character. This will return the second character. So we'll get A paired with B, and the remaining unparsed string CD. So we could let num be, what is it? Int from digit? Is that what it's called? Can't remember. What converts an integer to a digit? Is it int from digit? No. Somebody remind me. Sorry? No, to convert a character to a digit? 2-digit. Let's just try. No. Digit to int. That's it. Yeah. Digit to int is what does it. So if I apply always digit to int and a digit to 5xx. Right, it returns not the digit 5, but the integer 5. So now I can define a parser for digits, right? So this is going to parse a digit, but convert it to a number. So now if I do apply dig to 56, right, returns 5 and 6xx. And now let's let f be fxy, just be x plus y. So now if I do apply, apply, always f, and then dig, and then dig, what's that going to return? Right. The first dig finds the 3, converts it to a number. Second finds the 4, converts it to a number. Then f is going to add the 2. Okay? So now we're beginning to do useful work. But wait a minute. Why does this work? What's going on there? I defined star, star, star.